This podcast is being brought to you in part by the veteran-founded Hero Soap Company, located in Phoenix, Arizona. In today's environment, we must be aware of the products we apply to our skin. As a two-time cancer survivor, I cannot afford to take chances, and I use these products myself. The soaps will leave you feeling clean and refreshed. All the products made by the Hero Soap Company are made in the United States with the highest quality ingredients sourced from companies in the United States whenever possible. The products are made in small batches to ensure high quality and contain premium essential oils and fragrance. All Hero soaps are created without synthetic colorants, parabens, and sulfates that are irritating to the eyes, skin, mouth, and lungs, and are cruelty-free, meaning these products are not tested on animals. Each 5-ounce bar of soap is handmade in Phoenix, Arizona, and the body wash is available in 8 ounces with such refreshing scents as the woods, tea tree, lavender, the fields, bourbon, lime, the pines, and Arctic. You will absolutely love this soap. Please also check out their gear for sale. All the products are reasonably priced. Being veteran-founded, the company understands the dedication and sacrifice that each family makes to serve their country. A portion of sales is donated back to charities that are focused on helping veterans and our first responders. Over 1,200 bars have been sent to our deployed troops. Please check out their website, HeroSoapCompany.com, for pricing and a detailed description of all the products. When ordering, use the code RAP for a 10% discount. The company information will be listed in the podcast notes and featured on the podcast website, Facebook group page, and the podcast Instagram. Welcome, everyone, around the world to It's a Wrap with Rap. I am your host, Ron Rappaport. First off, I would like to thank all of our listeners, supporters, and sponsors for making this podcast such a success. The podcast is being heard in all 50 states, all provinces of Canada, and over 70 countries around the world. The podcast has been ranked by FeedSpot as one of the top 35 overcoming adversity podcasts on the web. Visit our podcast website, itsawrapwithrap.com, for all the episodes, and to order logo merchandise, of which a portion of sales is donated to charities and service organizations. This podcast features people who have overcome life's challenges and adversities, people who can inspire, motivate, and educate us on an assortment of topics. My guest today is Rissa August. Rissa grew up in Ohio and graduated from Kent State University with a BA in Geography and Geographic Information Systems. She has extensive experience in the environmental field, having worked for government agencies, various conservation districts, watershed restoration programs, and Native tribes. Today, Rissa lives in Colorado, where she runs day-to-day operations of an equine gestalt therapy program. Rissa considers herself an artist, a writer, a world traveler, and a certified gestalt practitioner and teacher of mindfulness. She has just completed her new book, The Road Unpaved, Border to Border with a Brain Tumor and a Bike. Rissa is an endurance athlete and passionate road cyclist who has always been attuned to her body. She began to notice something was wrong in the spring of 2011. After 8 years of medical tests and doctor's visits, she was diagnosed with acromegaly in October 2018. She is here to tell her story of dealing with this rare disease and to share her story with us of her 1,845-mile soul healing journey on the Pacific Coast Highway from Canada to Mexico on a bike. Welcome, Rissa, to the podcast. It's an honor to have you here with us.
Oh my gosh, I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you.
We're very happy to have you, and you have an awesome story to tell. Now, you started out as a wedding planner. What prompted you to the practice of gestalt, and specifically equine am I pronouncing it right, Gestalt, and explain to us what is Gestalt therapy and the role of horses in this practice.
Sure. And it's Gestalt, actually.
I don't know if I'm ever going to pronounce it right.
That's okay.
Say it one more time.
Gestalt.
Gestalt. Okay.
Yes. And it's a German word, and the best way to translate it would be meaning wholeness. So yeah. So how did I go from wedding planner to Gestalt practitioner? I think, you know, there's a high burnout level for event and wedding and event planning. I think it's usually around 5 to 7 years, and mine happened around the 5 year mark. I just became disenchanted with the industry and felt like I was working really hard to make everyone happy for little payoff, I guess. But I also started evolving personally and really looking at myself, reflecting on my life. And I started working for a woman who pioneered Gestalt therapy, partnering with horses. And I can't say I'm a horse girl. I never got into the horse part of it, but I became really interested and fascinated with the Gestalt side of it. And so I became certified and became a practitioner myself.
Okay, so explain to us what the therapy is like.
Yes, so Gestalt is, I like to describe it as, it's a more of a non-traditional and holistic type therapy. It's very experiential. And there's really no proper way to define it, but it's a very organic process, and it's very coactive. So the client and the coach, or the client and the practitioner, work together to help the client find the answers that are within themselves.
Okay. And what kind of clientele would come to you? What demographic mostly?
Yes. Well, gosh, there's all kinds. And a lot of practitioners go on to have a niche, something they really specialize in. I'm finding myself naturally settling into more of inspirational and like business building. So I'm actually working, I seem to be thriving more with working with other coaches, building their practices and their businesses, and helping them come up with creative ways to grow what they're trying to build, if that makes sense.
Okay. Now, it does make sense. And where exactly do the horses come into play?
Well, I don't specifically partner with the horses, but I happen to run the behind the scenes for a woman and her business, and she's the one who pioneered that specific type of therapy, partnering with horses, and I do all the admin for her.
Okay.
And that's just, so I do the business side of things for her, and that's where my interest in Gestalt came into play, because I started seeing the work she was doing, and the people who went through her program, what they were doing. And that's how I got interested in Gestalt. If I can come up with a way to partner with bikes and Gestalt, you know, who knows, maybe I'll create something there.
Okay. So for example, say you were partnering with bikes, how would that affect the client? What would the bike do for the client? Like the horse does something for the client. Does the horse make the client feel better or get into their feelings or something like that?
Well, the horses, they align with humans' kind of energetic fields.
Okay.
So they can tap into the somatics of a person, what they're feeling in their body, oftentimes before the human or the client realizes it themselves. And just like people, horses have their strengths as well. So For example, there might be a course that is really good at aligning a person's chakras, or another horse might be really good at pantomiming. And what I mean by that is they pantomime something that maybe isn't fully aware in the human's, or isn't in the human or the client's awareness. So the horses will like act it out. It's really fascinating. I had no idea how magical horses were until I started working for this company.
So it's like an intuition thing from the horse.
Yes, it's very energetic, very, you know, they just live on a level that humans are closed off to.
Yeah. You know, like I wasn't even pronouncing the word right, and really never came into contact with Gestalt. But is this something that people, how do people learn about that it even exists? Do you guys advertise this, or is it just something they pick up on their own, reading a book, or how does that work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, any and all of that. You know, I can give out the website of, you know, my boss's website. You know, she specializes in that and has certification programs through that. You can pick up a book and learn all about it. Or, you know, you can do Google searches, and there's some Gestalt institutes in the country that teach that as well. So it's heard of, but it's getting out there. It's growing, but it's certainly not new. It's been around for a very, very long time.
Now, you trained to become an endurance athlete. Can you tell us some of your accomplishments in that arena, and which of those endeavors was the most challenging for you? I know you did some climbing and all kinds of stuff. So can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well, I started in 2003 racing triathlons, and I fell in love with it right away. And so I started to, my goal was always to do an Ironman. And so I built my way up to an Ironman distance race and did my first Ironman in 2010. You can actually see me crossing the finish line behind me on the wall.
Okay, now for our audience who doesn't know, and I'm well aware, I used to be a runner, triathlon is it's a bicycle ride. How many miles is it? I can't remember.
Yeah. So it's a swim, bike, and a run.
Swim, bike, and a run.
And there's different distances. The Ironman, the full distance Ironman, is a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and then a marathon run. So it's 26.2, correct?
That 2.5-mile swim, does that have to be done in an ocean, or can it be done in a lake, or how does that work?
It depends where the race is. Sometimes it's in an ocean, sometimes it's in a lake or a reservoir, or a very wide, wide river. Yeah, so I did mine both in lakes. They were the one, I did two Ironmans, and they were each in a lake. One was in Arizona, and one I did in Boulder, Colorado.
Okay, and you did other endeavors, though. Didn't you go to Nepal, I believe?
I did. I trekked to Everest Base Camp in Nepal. And Everest Base Camp is a roughly around 17,500 feet, and then climbed a mountain called Kalapatar, which is just over 1,800,000 feet. And oh my gosh, that was a magical, amazing, amazing trip.
So I have to admit to you, I've been to Nepal. We flew into Kathmandu, not to do a climb, but we did get into an airplane. The name of the airline was Buddha Air. It was a small plane, and we actually flew around Mount Everest.
Which is really
awesome. So wow. I know you climbed to base camp, right?
Yes.
And that's what, 18,000 feet?
That's 17.5.
17.5. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. And I know you've done cycling as well, which we're going to get into. And anything.
Let me take a very brief moment out to alert all our patients and caregivers out there that Rare Patient Voice, a supporter of the podcast, is paying for your input. Patients 16 years and older and caregivers, family, and friends of any disability, disorder, syndrome, illness, or condition have the opportunity to express their opinions through surveys and interviews to improve medical products and services. Who knows your journey better than you? Rare Patient Voice puts you in touch with researchers who are developing products and services that can help you and others with your condition. These researchers need input of patients to develop products and services that have significant impact on patients' lives. Over the past 9 years, Rare Patient Voice has paid patients over $10 million. When you join Rare Patient Voice, you may be invited to participate in interviews, surveys, or online communities where you will share your insights. Rare Patient Voice usually has hundreds of studies running at any time, so there are many opportunities to participate. You will earn $120 per hour for participating in these studies. By making your voice heard, you are a catalyst for change. Rest assured, your input will be used to help other patients like you. There is no cost at all to you, the participant. You can get more information and sign up by clicking the link in the sponsor's notes.
Besides cycling and mountain climbing that you tried?
Well, I liked anything outdoors, really. But in terms of fitness, I got really into CrossFit. CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting as well.
So. Wow. Okay. Now, I want to get into something that we're here to talk about. In the spring of 2011, you noticed that something was off in your health, the way you felt. Can you describe to us the symptoms you were experiencing and tell us about your pursuit with the medical community trying to find out what was wrong with you?
Yes. Well, so as I was saying, in 2010, I finished my first Ironman, and then it was 2011. A friend of mine asked me to do a 500-mile bike tour with her in 6 days. So wow. 500 miles in 6 days. And, you know, of course, I'm like, yeah, no problem, right?
What's that, 80 miles a day, something like that?
Yes, roughly, yeah. So, but I noticed it was really hard. It was really hard for me, and I was struggling, and I put on a ton of weight and was just not feeling great, like not doing well. And that's when I started to notice, I was like, okay, something's wrong here. Cause I ate very strict diet, and I probably was an overtrainer, not for anything other than I just loved working out. I just loved exercising and fitness. And so that's when I started noticing. And so I started going to the doctor, and I'm like, hey, something's off here. Something's not right. And things were pointing to my thyroid, but my blood work kept coming back normal. And, you know, and I kept seeing doctors, and they're like, you're fine. And, you know, you might have this, but you don't need to worry about it, and blah, blah, blah. And so it was just, so that was 2011.
Right.
And I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm fine.
And how did your health challenge affect your personal life, and who and what were you finally diagnosed with in 2018, I might add? So this has been going on for what, around seven, 8 years?
Yes. So things progressed after that. I just kept getting bigger. I mean, literally, I was getting bigger.
So you were gaining a lot of weight.
I was gaining a lot of weight, but like, my shoe size was getting bigger, and
were you eating more or not really?
I wasn't, my diet hadn't changed.
Right.
And like I said, I was very much a fitness fanatic. So I was constantly exercising, and And so it, fast forward to 2017, I decided, okay, maybe it is me. Maybe I'm not eating right. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. I no one can seem to give me an answer. And so 2017, I decided I'm going to do another Ironman. And this one was in Colorado. And my training was excruciating. And I actually let go of one coach for another because I thought the coach was giving me the wrong workouts because I was never recovering. I just wasn't feeling good. I barely crossed the finish line of that Ironman. And then I couldn't like get off the couch after that. So I started looking at the HPA axis and I thought I had adrenal fatigue. I even read about post Ironman depression. I mean, I was struggling to function. So then 2017 into 2018, it just spiraled from there. I was getting these extreme headaches, still growing, still expanding, a ton of pain in my body. And I kept going back to my doctor, and she would say, "No, your blood work's fine." And things were sort of easy to explain away. And she would tell me you're overtraining or I'm not worried or, and I honestly, I think people thought I was eating more than I was letting on, things like that. And I started to think maybe I was going a little crazy here. Maybe it is me and I'm doing something wrong. But it wasn't until the summer of 2018 when my headaches were so severe that I asked for an MRI. Like it couldn't have been dehydration or overtraining. And she, my doctor, denied it. She was like, "No, I don't think you need one." And I said, "No, I want to get one and just rule anything out." And
Yeah.
she was like, "No, they're expensive. You don't need one." And I said, "Order me an MRI." I got a little demanding at that point. And she did. And a week later, she said, "You have an enlarged pituitary. You need to see an endocrinologist."
Okay, so just backing up a little bit, all those
Sure.
years, were you just seeing one doctor for this, or were you seeing other doctors?
Yes, I was going to multiple doctors. I kept switching doctors, but probably the last 3 years before diagnosis, it was the same doctor. Yeah.
Was it a like an internal medicine doctor or GP, that type of
Yeah,
thing?
it was a primary, just a primary care physician. Yeah,
Okay,
primary care.
okay. So you're finally diagnosed in 2018, and what were you diagnosed with?
So I was diagnosed with a pituitary tumor, so a macroadenoma, which was about a little larger than a golf ball on my pituitary gland,
Okay.
which is sits at the base of your brain. And this tumor was causing the disease called acromegaly.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about acromegaly for our audience out there. Tell us what it is exactly and what the symptoms are.
Yes. So, I think it could be a little different for everyone, but for me, what the acromegaly does is, well, what the tumor does is it kind of it messes up the whole system of the pituitary gland. So it causes an over it over sorry, I'm struggling to find my words. It causes like a dump of growth hormone into my body, like constant,
Which
like
explains why you were
massive
growing.
levels of growth hormone beyond anything. Yes, exactly. And so it explained a lot of things. Anything that messes with the hormones wreaks havoc on the body.
Right.
I'm not sure that everyone understands how much hormones actually control us, control every little minute thing in our body. And so having too much of it just makes things go haywire. And it causes a lot of, it causes bone and tissue growth. So you literally grow and you continue to grow.
I did a little investigating, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, but there's 22,000 cases in the U.S. Does that sound about right?
Yes, there's only roughly around 22,000 cases in the U.S. Anything under 200,000 is considered rare.
Yeah.
But these tumors are believed to not be so rare. They're really hard to diagnose. The symptoms are like fatigue, headache, joint pain, and then oftentimes blood work comes back normal, even though, you know, there's something not normal going on. So
right. And you know, we talk about this with several of the people that come on the podcast with various things that have gone wrong and they have to overcome them. And one of the big things is, you know, if your body's not feeling right, I think you'll agree, you've just got to get aggressive and you have to be your own advocate. And you just have to go.
Yes.
And if you can't find a doctor that's going to help you, you've just got to take the bull by the horns and find another doctor and keep searching, because you know your body better than anybody. And there's no way that, yes, somebody who trains as hard as you do and eats a strict diet regimen should be growing at that rate. That's just not normal. And I've seen it myself. They'll give you the lab test and they'll look at the labs and they'll say, yeah, everything's great, but it's not. And a lot of times it's tumors and things like that. Same thing with male breast cancer, which I suffered with the fellow that started Male Breast Cancer Happens.org, which I advocate for 7 years. For 7 years, he was misdiagnosed, and he had a tumor in his chest, in his nipple, and they told him it was everything under the sun, but the right thing, until finally it started leaking, and he thought it was. They told him it was calcium buildup, so he thought it was the calcium leaking. And, you know, it finally took going to another doctor to finally figure it out. Fortunately, it didn't spread. But the thing out there for the people in the audience is, you know, if you think something's wrong and they're not giving you answers and you don't like the answers they're giving you, just keep plugging away and go to another doctor until you find out what's wrong with you. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I became so vocal that I actually had some doctors fire me as a patient, you know, because they tried to tell me what I should do and how I should do it. And I was like, you're not hearing me.
Right.
I know this doesn't work. Either I've already tried it or I researched it, or I'm not willing to do that, you know, and you know, I had a couple doctors let me go, which was fine. I ended up, you know, if you read my book, you'll find that I ended up with an amazing doctor, and now it's a very co-active relationship. And she'll say, hey, I think maybe this, and I'll say, I don't want to do that. What do you think of this? And it's there's a dialogue, and I just feel so blessed to have that.
Yeah, I did read your book, by the way. It's an awesome book.
Thank you.
It was a very good read. Okay, so fast forward, January 22nd, 2019, you have surgery performed. Tell us about that time and your recovery process and your mindset. I know you wanted to get back into cycling. So what was that time like for you?
Yes. So I perhaps was a little cocky. I remember thinking, okay, let's just get this over with, this brain surgery. And, you know, because 6 weeks after brain surgery, I had a 250-mile bike ride in Moab, Utah, that I wanted to do.
Over 20,000 households each month make the choice to join Switch to the Box Shopping Club. They realize being their own health advocate and voting with their dollars becomes their voice. An estimated 133 million Americans, nearly half of the population, suffer from at least one chronic illness. such as hypertension, heart disease, and arthritis. That figure is 15 million higher than just a decade ago. And by 2030, this number is expected to reach 170 million. Studies show that one in every three people will have cancer in their lifetime. We are being led down a path of deception through false advertising and subpar testing of the products we use. Lawsuits are mounting against huge corporations for products contaminated with dangerous amounts of cancer-causing chemicals, products labeled natural actually containing synthetic ingredients, fraudulent labeling of products, sunscreens being recalled after an internal testing shows low levels of benzene, a carcinogen in the product. According to the Consumer Reports National Research Center, 78% of Americans prefer to purchase products manufactured in the United States. Great news. Switch to the Box represents a North American manufacturer located in the United States doing business since 1985 that has met the standard of formulating, manufacturing, and packaging products that are safe, free of harmful chemicals and toxins, are effective, competitively priced, offering outstanding customer service, privately owned and patriot-driven. You will find Switch to the Box products to be more effective than national brand products making laundry rooms, living rooms, bedrooms, kitchens, nurseries, and bathrooms safer and more enjoyable. The products feature natural ingredients like citric acid to remove hard water stains, enzymes to clean dishes, and biodegradable ingredients to gently remove tough stains from laundry. Every nutrition, personal care, home cleaning, and cosmetic product has been developed and manufactured to stand out from the competition. Each of their over 400 products is superior in a very clear and relevant way. Become a member today. There is no added expense to your budget by joining, as you are already someone else's customer. Click the link in the podcast notes to obtain information on joining and a full description of the program and all the benefits. Now, back to the podcast.
So I remember asking my neurosurgeon, you know, how long is this recovery thing going to take? I have this tour. And he thought he looked at me like I had two heads.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I thought, oh, I'll show him. I'm going to get back on my bike. But that's not what happened. They did the surgery through my nose, and I had to wait about 3 months to until everything healed up to have an MRI to see if they got the entire tumor. That's when I learned they did not. The rest of it's inoperable. It's wrapped partly around my carotid artery and part of it's too close to my optic nerve. Okay. And so now I have to either get radiation treatment or be on medication to basically stop the tumor from dumping this excessive growth hormone into my body.
So even the little bit that they couldn't get was still dumping growth hormone.
Yes. And it still is to this day. I'm still not, I ended up proceeding with radiation treatment, which, you know, as you read, was an excruciating decision for me. And I'm still on medication trying to get control of the growth hormone. And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but the growth hormone is what will kill me. If it doesn't get under control, I'll eventually die from like an enlarged heart or something along that line, because it grows everything in your body. So I'm still in the midst of that battle. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting ahead here. So 3 months, I find out, okay, it's back. They couldn't get it all. And I couldn't do anything. I couldn't function. I couldn't even get on my bike. I was just wasted. So I started painting, and I was like, I need something more. I can't imagine this being the rest of my life. And so I started thinking about my bucket list, and riding across the country was always on my bucket list, and started looking at routes and wasn't really thrilled with some of the cross country routes. And then I found the Pacific Coast bicycle route, and yeah, I was like, That's the one.
That leads me to my next question. So you're a very private person from what I learned by reading the book, and you opted to do an 1,845-mile bike ride down the Pacific Coast Highway from Canada to Mexico, and you chose a tour group to do it with, which was kind of not really your style, because you're a very private person, and a tour group probably was the last thing you wanted to do. So what was your reasoning to do such a long ride after surgery, and why did you choose a group tour?
I needed something to look forward to. I needed a goal. I'm a very goal-driven person. And now here I am faced with a new life. Like, I knew at that point my life was never going to be the same. Right. I most likely wasn't going to ever be able to do an Ironman race again. I needed something.
Sure.
Something to live for. Not to sound over dramatic, but for me, I needed something to live for, something to look forward to. And that's how, and really something like this, like, and you maybe you can relate to this, Ron, but you know, when something like this happens, it really forces you to reflect on your life. Like, what am I doing? And does it feel important to me?
Right.
And so I really relate. Started reflecting on my life. And
yeah, I can definitely relate. I'm very goal oriented myself. And I certainly know what you're talking about. You want to live for something. You just don't want to sit around and feel sorry for yourself.
Right.
And you're not going to get any better doing that anyway.
Exactly. What's going to bring us joy and right and purpose and meaning. And I ended up with the van tour because at that time I didn't, it was kind of strange to go from, I could hop on my bike and put in an 80-mile day, no problem, you know, have some water and a few snacks and I'd be good to go. But now in this new body, not the case at all. And I didn't know if I'd have the strength to finish riding each day. And then I had medications to think about that had to be refrigerated and properly administered. And so I thought, it was called a semi-supported, ride. So they transported all your gear, but they were not SAG support. So you were completely on your own, getting yourself from point A to point B each day. And if you wanted your gear, you had to meet the van in the next town. With that said, it was still this kind of security blanket of, okay, well, if I'm in dire straits, I know I could call them and for emergency rescue, I'll have them.
Yeah.
You know, but it turned out to be more challenging than helpful, for many reasons, but there were no rest days, that I can, let me rephrase that. I didn't get to choose my rest days. I had to follow the van if I wanted a tent and sleeping bag to sleep in the next night. So,
what happens, Rissa, what happens if you have a flat tire?
Yeah, I have to change the tire myself, and any issues on the road, you have to figure it out yourself.
You're on your own.
You're on your own.
So they're pretty much just basically transporting your for lack of a better word, your gear from point A to point B.
Yeah, like my tent, sleeping bag, you know, extra clothes, and like medications for me and stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
Okay. And what about food? How does that work? You just stop on your own or what?
During the day, you figure it out on your own. But they actually, we would give them a list of the food we wanted each day, and they would get the groceries for us. And then but it was up to us to cook it. Like, it was up to us to cook and prepare our own meals.
Okay.
And everything.
So this is not like the Ritz-Carlton where they do everything for you.
Yeah, no, not this trip.
It's not a luxury trip.
It wasn't a luxury trip.
Let me ask you this. How did you gather the strength to do the ride, especially, and everybody out there, remember, she still got this tumor in her. What effect did that tumor have on you? And where did you get the strength to do this?
Yeah, I feel a little emotional here with that question. Again, not to sound over dramatic, but like it almost felt like life or death to me. Like I really had to prove to myself that I wasn't going to let this tumor and disease stop me from living an amazing life.
Right, right.
And so I was getting on that bike, come hell or high water, like, and I was going to get to the other end if people had to drag me. Like I needed to prove this self.
God bless. I mean, honestly, God bless you. That's great that you could do that and you could push forward and just over. I mean, not only are you a survivor, you're an overcomer. I have no question about that. Now, I understand you connected with a sponsor, and can you tell us a little bit about that for the ride?
Sure. So I reached out to a neuroendocrinologist in San Francisco at UCSF, Dr. Blevins, and he specializes in pituitary tumors and acromegaly. And I said, hey, I'm doing this ride. I want to bring, there's not enough information out there about it. So I want to try to bring attention to this disease. And can you maybe post my story on your website or buy me a jersey or something? And he said, you need to talk with someone. So he pointed me to J.D. Fascinetti, who partnered with Dr. Blevins to start this Pituitary World News organization. And it's a place for people with pituitary tumors to go to find out more information and all the latest treatments and things that are happening out there. And so I ended up connecting with JD, and we just hit it off. And he's been such a huge supporter of me and really helped me learn like what's out there, what's possible. He happens to be an acromegaly patient himself. And they believe he had his tumor for 10 years. It's believed that I had mine for about 15. So, so he was this huge supporter in that. And then he connected me with some pharmaceutical companies that got on board and were really excited about what I was doing. And it just kind of snowballed into this big thing that I didn't even, all I wanted was a jersey or my story published. And it turned into much bigger than that.
Yeah. It's funny how, your life changed, a door closed, but then more doors opened.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now you're doing this and you're affecting people. You're helping people. So that's great. Now, how did the ride change you, and what life lessons did you learn from it?
Oh gosh, how did it change me? I went into the ride wanting to do it on my own. I didn't want any help or support. And what I learned was it's okay to ask for help and support. And I connected with some of the people on the trip, and man, thank God for them. And and one of them is one of my biggest supporters to this day. But, you know, my goal on this ride was to spread awareness and get conversation going around these tumors. And, you know, and so I carried buttons and stickers with me along the ride. And he was constantly pushing me, like, remember why you're here. Remember why you're doing this. And he would make me talk to people. And, you know, and I'm so grateful for that. And so that was one of my lessons. Another lesson is, you know, life, the obstacles that we come across in our life are often our own doing. You know, we see obstacles as blocks, and what I learned is, no, it's really a matter of perspective. It's a matter of how you look at that. You know, and so a lot of times we say, oh, I can't because of this or that. And it's like, well, what can you do? What can you, well, I can go around it, or I can find another way, or I can go over it or through it or whatever the case. Or maybe do something completely different and pivot, you know, and that was a big lesson for me. And that's becoming a huge message in my mission to inspire people is, you know, change your verbiage, you know, start asking yourself instead of telling yourself what you can't do, start asking yourself what you can do.
Yeah, I found that out when I was going through my two cancers. Instead of asking why is this happening to me, ask why is this happening for me.
Yes.
Yeah,
Oh my
and that
gosh.
really that changes the whole ball game. It really does. Rissa, do you
It
have any
really.
more adventures lying ahead for you? Do you have anything out that you're trying to accomplish?
I do. My life has gotten so expansive since this bike ride. I've taken a ton of classes like axe throwing, and I took a silks aerialist class at a circus school, and I've gone indoor skydiving and learned hip hop dance and boxing, and I'm doing all this stuff. And I even hiked over the Salcantay Pass in Peru, which is 15,000 feet, and went to Machu Picchu. And my next goal is riding my bike across the Camino de Santiago in northern Spain.
Yes,
And
I've been on that trail
oh my
in northern
gosh.
Spain. I was at the stayed at one of the I can't Paradores, they call them Paradores, where that march ends, and they have
Okay.
that big church there. It's really something else, and there's just people all the time on that trail doing that trail, and that's a great goal. And it's just a great place, Northern Spain.
Oh
You'll
gosh, well,
really love it.
I may have to pick your brain a little bit more on that.
Well,
So,
I've been to about 70 countries. So
wow,
yeah, we were
that's
fortunate. We
amazing.
started traveling when we were young, and I've been to Machu Picchu, so
Oh,
I can relate. So we'll have to chit chat about all that.
I would love to. Yes,
Yeah.
I love traveling. Yeah.
Now, Marissa, for those out there struggling with their challenges, whatever they are, it could be health issues, it could be anything. What message do you have for them?
Yes. Well, the message would be, you know, think about where you might shift your perspective. And I'm going to tell you this short little story.
Sure.
I was only supposed to be in ICU for 2 days. Or no, I'm sorry. I was only supposed to be in the hospital for 2 days. I ended up being in ICU for 10 days. Around day five, the doctor came in and I was really put out. And I was like, I was only supposed to be in the hospital for 2 days. It's day five. When do I get to go home? And he said to me, you know, Rissa, I like to think of it as a matter of perspective. And I'm like annoyed, right? And
Yeah.
I say, well, okay, doc, tell me what's this perspective? And he said, you're most likely the only one on this floor who will be going home. And I was like, oh my God, wow.
Yeah.
That sunk in. And
Yeah.
after that, I mean, like a light switch, I started shifting my perspective about everything, anything I possibly could. What can happen here? What is possible here? You know, okay, I might not be able to do an Ironman race anymore, but man, I can take a salsa class and love it. I can take up painting, and now I sell my art all around the world. Like, I mean, so I can write a book, you know, like the possibilities are endless. So ask yourself, where can you shift your perspective and start asking yourself, well, what can I do? What can I do?
Right. That's a
Yeah.
great story. That's a great story. Marissa, for those who want to contact you, How can I contact you?
You can go straight to my website, rissaaugust.com. That's R-I-S-A, August, just like the month.com. And you can find me through my website. And that's probably the easiest way.
Okay. So for everybody out there, you want to contact Rissa, it's R-I-S-A, August, like the month.com. I want to thank you, Rissa, for appearing on the podcast and educating all of us on Gestalt, acromegaly, and sharing your personal story, making yourself vulnerable. It's very courageous of you to do that and to keep doing it. I wish you nothing but success going forward and good health. Comments and suggestions for the podcast, you can email me at itsawrapwithrap@gmail.com. We have a Facebook group, It's a Wrap with Rap. We're on Instagram, It's a Wrap with Rap Podcast. We're on Twitter, or as it's known, X, at Rapper130, W-R-A-P-P-E-R 130. We have a website, It's a Wrap with Rap.com, and we are on YouTube. We have our own YouTube channel, It's a Wrap with Rap, the podcast uncut. All the episodes are on YouTube, and it is unedited, so it's the actual tape. And I want to thank everyone for listening, and for now, everybody stay healthy, and it's a wrap.